All rise. The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit is now open and in session. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Five cases on the calendar this morning. Great case involving the Harbor Maintenance Act, patent case, which is really a landmark case. Three government employee cases, two of which are being submitted on the briefs, will not be argued. And the third one is the first one we have. Upshaw versus the Department of Homeland Security, 2008-3149. Mr. Fisher.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Morris E. Fisher, and I am the attorney for the petitioner, Gary W. Upshaw, in this case. Your Honors, I think the case boils down to the Richardson case, which this court has heard. And the case in Richardson basically gives a history of these kinds of cases. And the history
emphasizes the discretion of the agency. How do you get past that discretion?
What the Richardson case says, a couple things. It says that while there's discretion, it's based on all the facts and circumstances in the case. And that the standard is that what has to happen here is that the reasons have to be clearly disclosed and adequately sustained. One very important distinction.
With an indictment, the reasons are pretty clear. The question is, how did they abuse their discretion? If you have an indictment, a law enforcement officer is presumed to always obey the law. The indictment itself gives justification for the suspension. And then they have the discretion on the back pay, don't they?
Because, Your Honor, in Richardson, the Richardson case notes that the case that it relies on, the Nakowitz case, is that in that case there was no administrative determination as to whether there was any misconduct. And this is a distinction that the court in Richardson says this. There's the government who wants to argue that any time the person's indicted and there's a potential for jail time, the person never gets the back pay. And the petitioner in that case wanted to argue that he always gets it if he's acquitted. So we have a case of Mr. Upshaw where he's acquitted. So the court says, well, what do we use? How do we know whether the case is something that is not arbitrary, not capricious, and that the court considered all the facts and circumstances? And the court points to the fact that is there an administrative determination? Is there a separate administrative determination in the cases? And this is also another case that they cite in the Retana case. The case says the same thing. The case says over there that in this case there was a, quote, pending disposition of a criminal charge and for a determination whether sufficient evidence existed to support an administrative action against it. And what the government did in those cases is they said, listen, whether you're convicted of this or not, you, as a government employee, are held to a higher standard. And we have to see, was there misconduct?
Yes, but conviction requires a high standard of proof. So even though he wasn't convicted, there was a basis for concluding that he did these acts.
And
within its discretion, the agency can suspend him and not award back pay.
And that basis and that determination found, rather, that it was worthy of a 60-day suspension. And it had a 60-day back pay. There was never a finding that said, based on this, we're going to go back for 4 years. You don't get any back pay. I think that's the fact that the judge did not do that in the case demonstrates to us that was not a reasonable thing to do. And the case could have been handled very differently by the government. The case could have said in the initial charge that the higher standard existed, you missed it, and you did misconduct, and because of that, you don't get back pay, and they did not do that.
To what extent was the 60-day suspension based on the grand jury tampering as opposed to the indictable offense?
I think that because the opinion of the administrative judge was so capricious, and it's hard to say. It's hard to say what his motivations were. He says, for example, as to the question that he says is the question of back pay, the arbitrator dedicates three sentences to the issue. He says, one says, he restates the standard, the determination of whether to award back pay is discretionary. Then he states that the agency considered the evidence without any reference. And then he says that there's insufficient evidence of a violation of arbitrary and capricious standard. He never does any real analysis of what is it that warranted the 60-day suspension of Milo back pay. And most certainly, he doesn't address why it goes back all the way for 4 years and he doesn't get any back. I think this case, this Upshaw case right here before your honors today, is a perfect case for the court to have a holding in line with Richardson to demonstrate what has to be done in future cases
And what would you recommend us to say? How would we reason that the agency abused its discretion?
The agency abused its discretion because the only thing it considered in denying the back pay for 4 years, the only thing, was that there was an indictment that could lead to jail time. And there was no case on point which says...
But the indictment was based on certain facts. Isn't that correct?
That.
So it's not just the indictment. It's the underlying facts.
For which there was an acquittal.
And
there
those
was
underlying.
A criminal acquittal.
That's right. There was a criminal acquittal.
Based on a higher standard. But that doesn't mean that the facts didn't occur. The agency concluded that the facts
had it. That's true, Your Honor. However, the arbitrator in the case didn't consider most of the evidence that went against that.
Well, on what basis do you say that? I mean, the evidence was before the arbitrator, and the arbitrator certainly had every good reason to consider it and mention that the evidence was evaluated and was sufficient to make that determination.
Because Your Honor, the testimony consisted of Mr. Upshaw and his wife. I'm referring to the charge of the wiretapping. And there was no live person who testified at that administrative hearing against it. Meaning, I'm not sure. And what the arbitrator did is he read selective trial transcripts. He left out five others that said that, you know, Mr. Upshaw had warned the people that basically that this was going to happen. So he tried to uphold the law in the best he could. And the arbitrator, this case, it's not a credibility issue case where the arbitrator says, I weighed all the evidence and I came to a credibility determination. I believe certain people and certain people I didn't.
But it's not a case where he ignored that evidence. He considered that evidence and found, based on the standard that he felt applicable, that there was sufficient evidence to support the conclusion he reached.
He says, in his opinion, he says that he relied on the evidence which is not in conflict. Okay? And he doesn't say why. He didn't ask a single question. He didn't hear any demeanor and nothing of anyone who had testified on this issue.
But he does say he relied on that evidence.
He relied on that evidence, right.
It sounds like a nitpicking the opinion rather than the decision. course, we review decisions, not rulings.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I fail to see the distinction in both. I see that the arbitrator listened to some testimony, and even if all of this is true, let's say all of this is true, and Your Honors are right, that all this is true, the question is, why did the arbitrator only take that to be a 60-day suspension? Why didn't he say, in his opinion, all of this shows that for 4 years he shouldn't have gotten the back pay? The fact that he doesn't do that, that the only conclusion that he makes is the 60 days, is indicative that he should have gotten the back pay. And with that, I'd like to reserve the last 5 minutes.
We will stay with the podium.
Moses. May it please the Court. I think there's some confusion here with respect to what the arbitrator did. I think what needs to be understood is that these were three cases, three separate arbitration cases that were consolidated into one single arbitration hearing. There was an arbitration following grievances regarding whether or not Mr. Upshaw should be indefinitely suspended, whether or not the agency took proper action with respect to that suspension. There was another arbitration case that involved the back pay challenge, the agency's denial of back pay. And finally, there was a third case that was going to arbitration that involved the agency's decision to suspend Mr. Upshaw for 60 days without pay. And one thing that has to be...
Well, they were going to remove him, right? And
correct.
Cut back to 60 days by the arbitrator, right?
That is correct.
So they were seeking removal.
Well, no, they were not. Chief Smikana, the chief of the MARFA Sector Border Patrol, had already decided to mitigate the penalty to 60 days. It was the agency's decision to mitigate that penalty.
Well, let me ask you a question here. That this individual's been acquitted, and through all processes of law, the individual's innocent. Under what circumstances do you think this court can reverse an agency's decision to deny back pay after the individual has proven himself or herself innocent?
Well, first, with all due respect, he was not proven innocent. There's nothing saying he didn't do what he did. It just, all the verdict shows is the prosecution.
He was not convicted.
That's correct.
Okay, that's playing with words here a little bit, aren't we? But let's get back to the point. Under what circumstances, following a trial where he's not convicted, does an individual get back pay even though the agency denies it?
You're saying after he's challenged the agency's decision, or?
Yes, for this court, under what circumstances would you say that this court, following the Richardson standard, could say, you know, that's going too far?
If the agency simply had a blanket policy whereby anyone, any of its employees who were indicted, prosecuted for a criminal act, and ultimately acquitted of those criminal charges, and then returned to duty following the termination of the indefinite suspension, if at that point the agency always said, no, there's no back pay.
Well, an agency's never going to say, we always do this, are they? They have to be unadvised by counsel, at least.
I agree with that, Your Honor. But certainly agencies have attempted to follow the Jankowicz opinion. And in that opinion, the agency was seeking to say, that's the way we do things. We do not grant back pay. And we're using the Jankowicz decision to say we don't grant back pay in the event that the employee is returned to duty following the indefinite suspension. That's how we do it each and every time, and we believe that the Jankowicz decision supports that.
That's the only instance in which this court could really question that discretion?
I point that out only because that seems to be the most egregious situation. That's the most arbitrary and capricious situation. That's certainly what the court is to look to, is whether or not the agency's actions were arbitrary and capricious, or whether they unlawfully delayed or withheld the back pay. In this case, we don't have that situation. The agency looked at all the facts and circumstances involving Mr. Hobshaw, including it did have a policy, although it was not an arbitrary or blanket policy. The policy of Border Patrol at the time, and I believe still the policy, is that when an agent, a law enforcement agent, is charged with a criminal offense, tried for that criminal offense, and ultimately acquitted, the indefinite suspension is certainly lifted and the agent is returned to duty, but they look at those facts and circumstances and typically do not grant back then. Because this is a law enforcement officer, a law enforcement agent. They're held to higher standards. Border Patrol is a law enforcement agency that must secure the United States borders and expects its agents to follow the law, whether they're on duty or off duty.
What was the basis for their decision? Was it the fact that there was an indictment or their independent judgment that the underlying actions had occurred?
Well, if the underlying actions led to an indictment and that indictment was that indictment involved a violation of a wiretap statute. On top of that, the agency was also considering that they had already begun an administrative investigation of Mr. Upshaw to determine whether or not he had committed this misconduct, the very misconduct for which, at least in part, he had already been tried for. They were also investigating for other things at the time, in addition to the possible violation of the wiretap statute. One of those other sets of facts involved his possible attempts to influence a member of a grand jury that could possibly be impaneled to decide whether or not he should have been indicted back in 2002 for the very wiretap charges.
Mr. Moses, in this case, the arbitrator considered the evidence relating to the underlying facts that gave rise to the indictment. But the proceeding, the criminal proceeding, took nearly 4 years to get resolved. Now, what would happen if the proceeding took 6 years or 8 years? Because there was no determination here of the duration of the suspension. And isn't that arbitrary?
I have to look back, Your Honor, at the record. I believe evidence was introduced during the arbitration hearing or in some way as part of the arbitration. Part of the reason that it took 4 years to prosecute Mr. Upshaw, this is my understanding, was one, indictments were removed and then reissued. That was one reason. It was the DA's office in Marfa. The other reason was that Mr. Upshaw himself went on active duty service, at least, I believe, twice in the military for months at a time, thus taking him out of the country. I believe once was to Bosnia. So,
well, that speaks to the very point I'm trying to make. I mean, shouldn't these factors be taken into consideration? Because here he lost all of that pay for the entire period of time. And if those proceedings took longer, presumptively, he would have lost even more. Whereas we're talking about the same conduct here.
Well, in this instance, I could see how that might be true, Your Honor, but in this instance and under these facts, I don't think the arbitrator should take that situation into account in Mr. Upshaw's favor, given that at least part of the delay was caused by him going on active duty. The other reason is, at no time did Mr. Upshaw's defense counsel file a motion that he was somehow being denied a speedy trial.
Because he's served our country in a different capacity, he should be penalized.
Well, he chose to volunteer to go overseas when he was being prosecuted in Texas.
Mr. Moses, Richardson says that the agency has discretion based on all the facts and circumstances. If this court were to determine that the agency didn't consider all the circumstances, could it send it back?
I believe that if the court determined that the agency did not consider all the facts and circumstances, I suppose you could send it back for remand.
What if we felt that the agency didn't give proper weight to all the circumstances, including the acquittal?
I'm not sure that these questions, obviously you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not sure that these questions are within the purview of this court. The arbitrator already determined that the agency had weighed all the facts and circumstances, and I suppose the question would be whether or not the arbitrator somehow abused his discretion. But it seems to me a lot of what Mr. Upshaw has raised in his briefs and here or argument today is a retrial. He's attacking what the agency did directly. Well, that's not the standard. The standard is to look at what the arbitrator decided. We've already tried what the agency did. And I'll point out one other point I want to make about what evidence was raised before the arbitrator, the arbitration. Both sides, both the agency and Mr. Upshaw's counsel, before the arbitration hearing occurred, had decided that the issue of back pain was something that needed to be dealt with under the Richardson decision and could be dealt with merely by argument on brief. Neither side presented arguments at the arbitration hearing through testimony. This was sort of a battle between the agency and Mr. Upshaw on paper over whether or not the agency had discretion, looking at documented evidence and the Richardson decision. So Mr. Upshaw to now say, the agency didn't present any evidence. Well, he didn't present any evidence either to show that the agency was acting in arbitrary and capricious fashion when it decided to deny him back pay. It was an argument on briefs, and it was agreed to by both Mr. Upshaw and the agency counsel. So that's why there's somewhat of a lack of testimonial evidence regarding the back pay issue. The other thing I'd like to point out is that if you look at the joint appendix, page 253, there is a letter in there that relates to the grievance procedure regarding the challenge to the back pay decision. And in that letter, the chief of the Border Patrol at that time, Simon Garza, pointed out that the agency, looking at all the facts and circumstances in this case and applying the Richardson decision, was not required to pay Mr. Upshaw back pay. He knew, even before the completion of the administrative investigation of him with respect to the 60-day suspension, that the agency was investigating him, that he was under investigation for the very misconduct for which he had already been tried, at least in part, in state court. And now the agency is saying, you've requested back pay, and this is why we're denying you back pay. And we're doing it looking at all the facts and circumstances. It's within our discretion and using the Richardson decision. The only other two matters that were raised in this case involved Article 32K, and I briefed that somewhat extensively. And the third issue was whether or not a nexus was established to even justify the indefinite suspension itself. The 60-day suspension is not being challenged on appeal, and neither is the 32G argument that was raised below before the arbitrator. The agency and DHS would ask that the court affirm Arbitrator Stone's decision on all grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Mr. Fisher has some time.
Your Honors, just one point I wanted to raise of this is that the argument today by agency counsel is a little different than he says in his brief. He says in his brief on page 15, he says, in general policy, the Border Patrol and the agency responsible for the enforcement of federal laws does not remit back pay to an employee who is indefinitely suspended pending the disposition of criminal charges and subsequently reinstated following acquittal. The MSPB has deferred to Border Patrol's policy regarding the denial of back pay following acquittal. His argument in his brief is that this is a policy. We forget about Richardson. We have a policy. Policy here at our agency is no matter what, the person does not get back. This is exactly the result that Richardson is trying to prevent. I mean, the rest of this is just new stuff. that should not be considered. Is the ultimate aim and the ultimate point of justice today is that the court cannot allow this policy to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. The case will be taken under advisement.